Gisela, do you want to do the roll call?
Absolutely. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's call, we have Holly Raich, Michaela Nalon, Tatiana Kramsova, Steve Metallitz, Siva Mutusami, Staten Hammock. From staff, we have Glenda Sangeri, Margie Milam, Heidi Ulrich, David Gieser, Marika Konings, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. We also have apologies from Elisa Cooper. And if I can please remind everyone to state their names before speaking for transcript purposes. And Dave Piscatella has just joined the call as well. Have I forgotten anyone on the roll call? Over to you, Steve.
Okay, thank you. This is Steve Metallitz. Welcome to everyone. I hope people can hear me without too much echo, because I know we have some sound quality problems. I've sent around a proposed agenda, actually a memo that kind of explains the first agenda item, which is our timetable. The second proposed agenda item is getting to started on our third task, which is suggesting next steps to the council of how it should deal with all of these topics. The third agenda item is to go back into the chart, either picking up where we left off on the last call or picking up after the last item for which there's been a proposal circulated, and see if we can move through that, and then any other business, which would include scheduling our next meeting, which presumably will not take place next week. So are there any other agenda items that people wanted to propose?
Sorry to interrupt, Steve. I believe the echo is coming from your line.
It's coming from my line? So should I try dialing
in again? Sorry for
that. I will do that. Okay.
Thank you.
Did you disconnect us?
Talents again. Am I still creating an echo here?
It's better.
Much better.
All right. Well, let's hope it stays better. So I think we've approved the agenda. I see Christina has joined us, and there may be others as well. But why don't we get started talking about our timetable? And as I laid out in the memo, if we're going to complete a report to send to the council in time for the Nairobi meeting, we have to have that done by February 15th. So one course would be to try to make that deadline, which I think would require two things. First, much more active participation on the list. And second, I think we would have to plan to have weekly calls starting the week after next. There's nothing magical or mandatory about having a report to submit in Nairobi, and I don't think it's at all a certainty that the council would have the time to take it up in Nairobi. But if it's a good target to shoot at, and I think if we want to meet it, we'll have to do those two things. Alternatively, we could continue on our pace and aim at submitting something for the April 1st meeting or the April 22nd meeting of the council. In both cases, I think we have to have our submission 2 weeks in advance. So let me open the floor to comments on the timetable. I guess before I do that, it's probably useful to ask how many people on this call and on our broader list are planning to be in attendance in Nairobi. Leaving aside the staff, who else on the call is planning to attend?
Steve, this is Staten. Right now, I'm planning to attend.
Okay. Steve, it's Christina. As of right now, I'm hoping to attend, but I'm still working out, still negotiating that with my husband.
Okay. Staten, Christina, there was another person.
Tatiana Khramsova. I will attend the meeting.
You will attend. Okay. Thank you,
yes.
Tatiana.
It's Holly Raish. I won't attend, but I know Cheryl is attending, but I noticed from the Adobe link that she's not there, so I better put her hand up for her.
Okay. Thank you. She says she's having phone issues. All right. Okay, Staten, Christina, Tatiana, and Holly.
Not Holly, Cheryl.
Oh, excuse me, Cheryl, I'm sorry. Yes, you said that, but I obviously wrote it down wrong. At this point, I'm not planning to attend, although that could change. Okay, well, that's helpful. Again, I don't think it's – we don't have to be there in person in order to have our report submitted and even discussed by the council, and I don't have a sense of the council agenda as to whether if we got it in by the deadline, they could – they'd be in a position to discuss it in Nairobi, but all we can control is when we submit the report. So let me then open up the floor to comments on our timetable. Do people think it is important that we get the report in time for Nairobi? And if so, are people prepared to kind of step up the pace here? Or just how do you want to proceed? I see that Staten has his hand up. Staten, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't think there's any rush to get the report in before Nairobi. I think going through all of these items we've identified, you know, we know it takes a little time, but I think it's worth the time. And we haven't really addressed, as you mentioned in your email, you know, all of the tasks that we have, and trying to crush everything in the next 2 weeks with multiple week meetings, I think is be very difficult for us.
Okay, Holly, I think you had your hand up.
In one sense, I disagree. I'd really hope that we could get something going, because the process after its start discussion is just so long, and if we don't get something, then the process becomes longer. On the other hand, I do agree that there are some very important issues here, and they do need a bit of discussion. So I guess I'll wear whatever the result is. I don't mind actually having a weekly meeting, though, if it means we'll get something to Nairobi.
Okay, Christina, I think, had her hand up. Does anybody else want to be in the queue?
I just wanted to say, from speaking for myself as a counselor, not the whole council, given some of the timing deadlines that are now in place in terms of how soon council has to, how far ahead council has to have not only things for discussion for purposes of agenda, but also motions, I just think that whatever decision is made about whether or not we push for Nairobi or not should take into account that, as a practical matter, even if we meet the deadline for getting something to the council for them to discuss in Nairobi, we wouldn't be able to, it simply wouldn't be possible to have any kind of motion or vote in place for the council meeting in Nairobi. So in other words, we could cover it during the working sessions on the weekend, but it seems unlikely we would be able to actually vote on anything in the following Wednesday. So you're looking at almost kind of a 2.5-3 week gap there anyways, and I just want to ask that folks build that in.
Okay, that's useful information. So just based on everything else that's happening at the council, it's unlikely that they could take any action on a report in Nairobi, although presumably they could discuss it. Holly, I think you had your hand up, if I'm not mistaken. I'm having a little trouble reading my screen here, but Holly, go ahead.
A question to Christine. In which case, what is the best way to make sure that we're on the next council meeting and then we can actually reschedule everything so we can make that?
I would say that just look at the, and I have to confess that I don't have it all memorized, look at the date for the first council meeting after Nairobi and work backwards. I do think that as a practical matter, this is a topic that council will probably want to discuss at a meeting, and moreover, we'll need to account for the opportunity for the various councillors to consult with their stakeholder groups and or constituencies, depending upon who they are and who they're representing. So I think you are, as a practical matter, talking about two meetings between when it's first presented for discussion and when council can actually vote. So if, for example, you wanted the council to be able to vote at its April 1 meeting, council would have to have if you wanted April 1, it would probably be too late. If you wanted April 22nd, council would have to have it for Nairobi.
So you're talking about a three meeting cycle then?
As a practical
matter, there's a meeting April 1, there's a meeting in Nairobi, there's a meeting April 1, there's a meeting April 22.
Right, exactly. Sorry.
Okay, Michaela, I think you had your hand up. Did anybody else want to be in the queue? Go ahead, Michaela.
No, I just wanted to support what Staten was saying. I mean, there's no point rushing things. I mean, it's better to do something properly rather than try to rush it just for the sake of rushing it.
Let me recognize myself. Does anybody else want to be in the queue? Yeah, I don't think it's a choice between rushing and doing it improperly. I think if we want to prioritize it, I think we can get the work done even by the February 15th deadline. But obviously, everybody does have a lot of other demands on their time, certainly. And I think what I take from what Christina is saying is that, well, again, there's nothing magical about Nairobi. We really should, considering that it will take a while for the council to process it, as she explained, and as Holly pointed out, even after the council does its thing, it's going to be an extensive process, presumably, before there's really decisions on and inclusion on any of this stuff in a revised agreement. I think it is important for us to move ahead as quickly as we can, but I certainly don't sense any consensus that we should make it our goal to have everything wrapped up by February 15th in time for submission of a report in Nairobi. Is that a fair reading of the discussion?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Siva, you had your hand up.
Yeah, I'm not in Nairobi, and I want to know if the meeting will be open for remote participation.
Yeah, I'm sure the work sessions, Christina, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the work sessions of the council will be open for remote participation, and the actual formal meeting of the council is webcast.
That is correct.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, we can also make a decision if we want our group to meet in Nairobi. You know, at this point, it doesn't look like a lot of us will be there, but a few will. And maybe as we get a little bit closer, we can try to decide whether we want this group to meet in Nairobi. But unless there's objection, we will proceed. I think we should proceed on our regular schedule. And again, I would encourage people, if we can, to get as much of this done on the list as possible, because we do have a lot of ground to cover. And I'm also going to suggest on the next agenda item that we do a little bit of parallel processing by having some people get started on a proposal for what we think the next steps ought to be procedurally. without regard to the particular topics. I see Holly has her hand up, and also Christina. I think Christina was first, actually, and then Holly. Yep.
Oh, Holly, go ahead.
I was just going to say, as a way forward, first I note the comment of Cheryl, supported by Christina, that comment, but the discussion would be worthwhile in Nairobi, surely. I'm not sure that not having something to put forward doesn't actually start the discussion, but I was just going to suggest as a way forward, having a revised agenda so that, in fact, we do target exactly what meeting we're aiming for and where we have to go, so that we actually, the time doesn't keep slipping away.
That's a good point. Christina?
I think that's an excellent suggestion. The other thing I was going to suggest, if it's possible, and I've been trying to come up in my head with ways to do it, and I'm not sure I have, but if there's even a chunk of this that we could at least be able to report back to the council in terms of this is what we've done so far, and this is where we're at, this is where we're going. Even if it, you know, for example, I don't know whether it would be possible to say, here are the topics that at least initially we have identified as first priority or highest priority, just so that there's, A, some information for council because they will need some kind of update, and second, to really keep the process moving along at the council level so that it doesn't really drop off of everybody's radar screens until right after the report is presented to them.
Okay, so you're suggesting that, of course, even though we may not be in a position to submit a final report, we certainly should be submitting a status report.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any disagreement with that. Let's see. I have Michaela and Holly. Michaela,
do you
want to be recognized?
Just very briefly. From what I recollect, staff should be able to confirm. Working groups have to provide some kind of basic status update to the council every couple of months anyway, so it's kind of moot in some respects, unless I'm missing something.
I've been providing a very brief status report to the council for every meeting. Glenn sends me an email, and I'd send her a two-sentence report back. But we certainly can and probably should plan to have something more detailed for the Nairobi meeting.
Okay.
Holly, I think you were next.
Just to support what Christina said, and I think it would be nice if we could have a little look at a more detailed report based on where we've got to before the next Nairobi meeting, and it can be just a status report, but that would be very helpful.
Okay. All right, then we will plan to prepare a detailed status report for before the Nairobi meeting, and then the suggestion about setting a target date for trying to complete our work and have something submitted to the council. I think there are two options. One would be, don't hold me to this exact date, but one would be about March 15th, which is would enable us to have something before the council to start its process at the April 1st meeting. And a second choice would be April 8th, which it would allow the council have something before the council so it could start its work at the April 22nd meeting. Do people have thoughts between those options or other suggestions? Holly, I'm not sure if you have your hand up or if I just failed to put it. I'm not managing the screen very well. I didn't know if you wanted to be recognized.
Actually.
Okay, sorry about that. All right. Okay, well, what I would suggest that we do is that we see if we can aim at getting our work done by March 15th. I guess depending on how many people are traveling to Nairobi, that may slow things up a bit. If we aim at April 8th, I could certainly send out a proposed timetable with, you know, what we would have to do at each of the meetings between now and then. And maybe that's the best way to proceed, and with the goal of having the report submitted by April 8th so that the council could have it for its April 22nd meeting. And of course, as we said, there would be we would prepare a detailed status report for the Nairobi meeting. Are people comfortable with that approach? Okay, then in that case, with hearing no objection, I will proceed on that basis. Okay, is there anything else on our timetable that people want to bring up? If not, let's turn to the next agenda item, which is subtask or task number 3 of our sub-team, which is recommending the next steps. And I wonder if a couple of people would be interested in preparing something that we could look at either our next meeting or the following meeting as a starting point to give our recommendations of how, assuming we've got our list and we've got our, you know, all of the items have been identified as high or low priority, what should happen next? Or do people have thoughts on that they'd like to share at this point, or are there people who would be willing to volunteer to try to come up with a proposal on that?
Hey, Steve, this is Margie. I just wanted to go back to the schedule. I just realized that the GNSO meeting on the 22nd of April is going to be changed because there was a conflict. And so we may have to revise our schedule when we know exactly what the date is going to be for that GNSO
okay.
meeting.
Do we know if it would be moved up or presumably moved back? We don't know.
Well, you've got a doodle open. It looks like April 15th is likely to be the date. So if that's the case, then April 8th is probably too late.
Okay, so we would move up our deadline in that case. When will that be decided? Do you know?
Steve, this is Glenn. Not until all the councillors have filled in the doodle, and I am chasing them up at the moment, so it should be within the next couple of days.
Okay, well, that's great. Then obviously, we'll have to modify our timetable accordingly. But thank you very much for pointing that out. Okay, let's see. Holly, I think you wanted to be recognized.
Yeah,
I don't think go ahead.
I would be prepared with probably one other person, at least just to summarize where we got up to, and obviously the notes on the matrix are really, really helpful. I'm not sure what else we would need to do other than say to rejig the matrix into some kind of report saying these are the things we've identified, and you could almost do it just from the notes that have happened. So I'm not sure what you envisage, but if you look at the matrix with the notes there, they're very helpful and they're a very good summary of where we're up to.
Thank you. Maybe I don't think I've been very clear. I totally agree with you that for our status report, we can do that, and that's how I would plan to prepare it, and I'll be glad to circulate something and let people have a look at it. But it would basically be based on that. What I'm talking about is we have a separate task, which is to recommend to the council, assuming our list is all completed and we've done all our prioritization, what should be the next steps toward discussing these as RAA amendments? Do we think the council should initiate any process? Do we think this recommendation should be sent to the staff and ask them to convene a group? Start the process? Do we think that the staff should draft a set of amendments based on these? Do we think that there might need to be parallel discussion? Since there are a lot of topics, do we think they should be discussed in parallel? I mean, I'm just throwing out ideas about some of the next steps that could happen, because remember, all that our group is charged with doing is really compiling this list, and then it's up to the council about what steps it takes next, or, you know, the staff and others that have participated So what I'm talking about in terms of our task number three and the report or the recommendation that we make there, it's not where we are in the grid. It's what happens after the grid is completed. So I hope that helps clarify it.
Thank you.
So do we have any volunteers to start working on that?
Steve, Cheryl here. My silence
yes.
is because of the huge workload that I have and many of the leaders within the at-large and ALAC world have between now and Nairobi. I think the deathly silence you're hearing is, I mean, Gisela runs my diary. She knows what it looks like. I'd be hard pushed to squeeze in more meetings other than in the stratas that are running now. And I'm also unsure whether or not that type of next step discussion isn't actually going to be rehashed in the work team as a whole, and so why not, once we've got the draft of the report, the interim report to the GNSO Council in our hands, we not focus, even if it is a additional meeting to do it, on just that discussion? Because
okay, so in other words, I think you're saying that if I can restate it,
that rather than
parallel
doing the
processing
sub
isn't going to work
yeah.
on this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not do it, but do it as a
yeah.
as a work committee of the whole rather than as a sub team.
Okay. Thank you. Holly had her hand up. Did anybody else want to be heard on this? Okay. Go ahead, Holly.
I was just going to say I think that's a good suggestion from Cheryl.
Okay. All right. Is there anybody in support of having the parallel processing where we will have a team helping, you know, putting together a straw man on next steps while we continue to work through the chart? Okay. If not, then we will dispose of that agenda item by saying that we will not work on that right now, and we will plan to work on task three after we've completed tasks one and two. Okay, so now we're back to tasks one and two, and the question, I think we had this question last time, is do we want to pick up with item five, which would be the after the last one we finished, after the last one we discussed at the last meeting, or do we want to pick up on item nine, I think, which would be the one after the last one that's been circulated on the list. So item five, for those who haven't committed this to memory, is privacy and proxy services. And item nine is
registrar information.
Registrar information. Thank you. So how do people want to proceed? Well, since we have five circulating on the list and six, seven, and eight, although they were under different numbers because, as I explained in the memo, our numbering has changed, I guess my suggestion is that we start on item nine. So, again, so we can keep making some progress on this. I think Holly wanted to be recognized, and was anybody else? Holly, go ahead.
Yeah, I think let's start on nine since we've sort of started other discussions and see what progress we can make on this one.
Okay. Great. Without objection, then why don't we do that? So if you'll turn to item nine on the chart, registrar information, the first few proposals all have to do with getting additional information on registrars and their affiliates. some of these are broader than others. But let me ask for any comments on those as to whether, first, do people understand what seems to be proposed there, and second, do we people have thoughts about what level of priority should be accorded to that? I don't know if anyone from the I think the most detailed description of this is under 9.1 from the staff proposal, but I think there are others. Did someone want to be recognized on this?
Holly has a hand up, doesn't she?
Holly, thank you. Well, please feel free to speak up, folks, because I'm obviously not catching all of this. Go ahead, Holly.
I didn't have my hand up, but my thought for some time has been there are already new requirements on resellers from the amendments that happened in, I think it's Mexico or Sydney, I think Mexico. We don't know how those have panned out. I would be interested to know how those panned out, and I'd really like to hear from a registrar on how much of this is actually easy, how much of it is doable, and I wouldn't mind also hearing from, I suppose, Dave, who is on the link but not on the phone, as to the other side, because some of these information requirements do come from both security and law enforcement agencies. So I really would like to know how much this information is actually necessary and how hard it's going to be to produce. And I think my third point I made last time is there a significant difference between proxy and privacy services that is implemented and used consistently by registrars?
Okay, thank you. Let me see, is there anyone on the staff who'd like to respond to Holly's second question about how useful this information would be?
Is David Giza on the call? I believe he is. David?
Yeah, hang on, Margie. I was on hold for a second. Okay.
Okay. David, we're talking about item 9.1 on the chart about the staff proposal about requiring the registrars to provide further information about themselves and their affiliates and significant resellers.
I think on that particular point, a good portion of that information, or at least a significant portion, I should say, will come to us through the updated processes and procedures that the registrar liaison team is currently, considering as part of the registrar application process. But I also believe that there's a back end component to this that's going to require more work, and so in that respect, particularly around resellers, I do think that we should have this provision or elements of this provision identified as a higher priority for purposes of a future amendment.
Okay, thank you. And then Holly also asked that if there's any reaction from a registrar about some of these points, and I see Michaela had his hand up, so I'm assuming you're responding to that. Michaela, go ahead.
Well, I'm responding to that and to what David was saying. with respect to what David was saying, the tool that David has mentioned, I presume, is the Radar Extranet tool. Would that be correct, David?
That's the tool that the Registrar Liaison team currently uses to collect all this information. That's correct.
Yeah. I mean, the Radar tool, for those of you who aren't familiar, and I'm actually having to open another tab because I was talking to one of my fellow registrars about it. At the moment, it allows each registrar to list various contact points for a variety of different things. So, for example, there's an abuse contact, a billing contact, a complaint contact, a data scroll contact, a public contact, primary contact, transfer contact, UDRP dispute contact, who is contact, and then there's various other things like IPs for who is whitelisting, port 43, who is URLs, and most of those contacts I can update myself. I don't need to get ICANN to do it for me. So if I wish to, for example, if I decided in the morning that whois.blackknight.com was no longer going to be our whois server, I should be able to change it there, I think, and it should automatically get picked up and sent out into the world, as it were. So I think, you know, a lot of the stuff that people are asking about, there's no reason why that can't be extended here, and the registrar liaison team can probably push the registrars to make sure that the various contact points are updated. I would have concerns about lumping contacts for resellers and registrars into the same clause, because until such time as somebody can provide a very clear definition of what exactly constitutes a reseller and what isn't, you know, where you actually draw the line, then I see that as being problematic. I mean, the spirit of what somebody might be trying to achieve or what you'll actually end up achieving could get perverted. So I think it would make a lot more sense to split those out. The 2009 RAA makes explicit what was already implicit in that the registrars are responsible for all domains on their accreditation, be they directly registered or done via a third party, some form of reseller. And while I can understand the frustrations and the various other things that people have, you know, there's getting the registrars to provide the information is one thing, but until such time as you can, you know, clearly identify what you're talking about in terms of resellers, I see that as being problematic. I think Holly was asking about the who is privacy and the proxy thing. Now, my understanding of it is that the proxy is when you do something on behalf of somebody else. So there are quite a few people who do that. I mean, one company we deal with on a regular basis does company formations and would also handle domain registrations for their clients. So they act as a proxy for their clients. I mean, that's just to give you one simple, silly, concrete example. Beyond that, I can't really say much more on the matter.
Okay, other comments? I'll recognize myself. This is Steve Metallitz. Michaela, I'm not sure I quite understand what you're saying about the problem of defining what a reseller is or understanding what a reseller is. Maybe you could give an example, but it seems to me that, as you said, the current RAA says the registrar is responsible for all registrations that it sponsors, and either those are, it seems to me, are either sold by the registrar or they're sold by somebody else. And if it's somebody else, that seems to me a functional definition of the reseller. But maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah, the thing is, Steve, is that at what point do you delineate somebody as being a reseller? That is the thing. I mean, if I go to a registrar's website and I register a domain name for myself, to myself, then obviously I'm not reselling. That's pretty clear cut. But if I go along and I register a domain name for a friend of mine, am I reselling it or not?
Wait. I think we maybe have two separate concepts on the table here. One is, let's not give you as an example because you work for a registrar. I don't. If I go to your website, to the Blacklight website, and register a domain name there, then presumably there's no reseller involved. But if I go to some other website, register a domain name, and that entity is basically acquiring domain names through you, in other words, they're domain names that you've sponsored, and Blacklight is listed as the registrar in the agreement that I sign, doesn't that make the other party a reseller? That's sort of what I understood a reseller to be.
Yeah, but that's a very clear cut example. But the case that I would have a lot of, and look, I'm sure Staten or somebody else could possibly chime in on this, is that if, for example, they don't go through a kind of a specific reseller channel, they can still end up registering a lot of domains for third parties. They could be a web development company, and they only have 50 clients. They've registered 200 or 300 domains for those 50 clients, but they're not going through a reseller channel. How do you identify that? And in some cases, how could you identify that? Do you understand the problem? I mean, it's one thing when you're looking at, registrars have different business models. There are several registrars whose sole business is dealing with the reseller channel, both in GTLDs and CCTLDs. And that is they don't deal with end users directly. They only deal with channel partners, resellers, call them what you like. But then you have a lot of registrars that would have, various variations on a theme. But the thing is that it hasn't been clearly categorized at what... I mean, there is something in the staff note there about what a significant reseller would be responsible for X thousand or X percentage of names under a registrar's management. But the point I'm trying to get at is that by lumping stuff, the collection of data released to the registrar, which is something tangible, which everybody can see, in with collecting data for a group that hasn't been really identified clearly, I see that as being problematic. And I'm seeing this happening in multiple GNSO working groups, where people throw out this reseller term, but nobody seems to really have clearly defined it.
Okay, so I think what I hear you saying is that needs to be defined. As you said, it should be treated separately in your view, and there needs to be a clear definition of reseller. Once that occurs, then
it's much easier. But the thing is this: if you just keep throwing around a term like reseller without clearly saying, what you're actually talking about, because your understanding of it, it's fine. I mean, it's a perfectly valid concept. Let's say, for example, okay, I'll have to pick on GoDaddy because they're a big target. GoDaddy.com, you go to their website, you register a domain name. But if you wanted to be an official, in between inverted commas, GoDaddy reseller, you'd probably be dealing with Wild West Domains. Not necessarily. That's the thing. It's like Two Cows, for example, through the Open SRS, they don't have direct registrants. But they would have the hover.com service is direct registrants.
Okay.
But the thing is, you're still going to have companies and entities who might be registering domain names for third parties. Whether you're considering those to be resellers or not, it's just, I don't know if I'm kind of making myself clear or not, but, it's just a case of it's something that needs to be defined, and just by lumping it in with the registrars, it causes more problems than it solves.
Right. Okay. So you certainly think it should be dealt with separately, and that a definition is needed. But if those things were done, then presumably we could look at the merits of this proposal from your perspective.
Define it, then I'll find a way to shoot it down. Don't you worry.
Okay, I think Cheryl had her hand up, and I don't see anybody else with their hand up at the moment, but please speak up if you want to be recognized, and we'll start the queue with Cheryl.
Thank you, Steve. Michele, I was very clear on what you were trying to make clear to us all here, and I was putting up my hand pretty much to say it's an issue we've grappled with in our CC environment here in Australia, and some of the examples you use are very close to what we've had to deal with, and we've left it at this stage, but this is why it does need defining and then dealing with, hopefully not just for you to shoot it down, is that, and I'll use myself as an example, I go directly with a registrar for all of my company domain names. I also register on behalf of other people in their own name if they ask me to, because I'm doing other business with them, and I am not a reseller under that definition. The minute that I then take an agreement, a discount, enter into some sort of contractual relationship or become a channel partner, I am. So, yes, we need to define it.
Okay. Any other comments on this 9.1?
Steve, it's Margie. I have my hand raised.
Okay, Margie, please go ahead. And I see Holly has her hand up also. So Margie, okay. Then Holly.
Sure. A couple points. On the first point related to what Michaela said about the radar system, the only thing I wanted to point out about that is that I believe the use of radar is voluntary. So all of the information that's there is solicited on a voluntary basis. I don't believe the contracts actually require the registrars to provide all of that information. Maybe David Giza can comment on that. But one of the reasons why it's suggested as an amendment is because, you know, we're looking at the situation in the event a registrar perhaps is not cooperative and not, you know, voluntarily providing the information, and it's something that we feel is important to be provided, that, you know, that's one of the reasons why it's suggested as an amendment topic. And then on the other point, I think I was going to say essentially the same thing that Cheryl Langdon Orr said regarding, you know, the ability to define what a reseller is. I think, you know, you can do some of the things that they've done and look to see whether, you know, this is a program offered or made available through a registrar, whether there's discounts, all that kind of stuff. I think it's a task that can be accomplished. So I just wanted to, you know, highlight those two points. In our amendments, when we talked about significant, this is the staff proposal, the significant resellers, we were trying to be sensitive to the issue that we've heard from registrars that there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of resellers, and, you know, we don't want to make this to be an overly burdensome responsibility. So we were trying to really hit the high, you know, the ones that really reach a certain, you know, threshold, and that's why we put in a numerical number in our proposed amendments.
Thank you, Margie. Holly, I think you were next.
One of the points that I wanted to make, which is it voluntary or mandatory to provide that information? And I think part of the recommendation we have ought to be to identify amongst the list that Michaela read out, what are the actual mandatory requirements for information? And I actually do support a better definition of reseller. I'm just surprised it wasn't done when the amendments on resellers were done, if, in fact, there is the confusion there is.
Okay. Other comments here? The one thing I'd point out is I'm not familiar with the radar tool, but I think there's the list that Michaela read out of those contact points and so forth. It's not necessarily the same thing as what's being sought in these proposed amendments. These go to, you know, the registrar's officers and directors and affiliated entities that engage in domain-related services, the registrar's parent corporation, and similarly, parent, subsidiary, affiliate, or entity under common control, which is also an accredited registrar. So I'm not sure that those are picked up by radar as it stands now, but as Margie pointed out, if that's voluntary anyway, it certainly might be appropriate to make it mandatory. Or make some of the collection of some of this information mandatory.
Steve, I mean, what David had said previously, and what I was going to add is that, you know, that is the information that it is possible to collect using the tools at the moment. I never said that was it, and that there would be no addition to it. What I think David may have been hinting at was that it would be possible to add and expand on what was being collected there. Now, whether or not that requires an RAA amendment or not, as specifically, if the danger with making a very specific clause in a contract is that you end up in a situation where it's black and white, which is great and wonderful in some respects, but it doesn't leave you with much leeway to add fields to something at a later point. So, for example, with the REA at present, a lot of us have signed one in the last few months, and it's valid for 5 years, whatever it is. So, if you make an amendment, it might be better to make it slightly less specific and slightly more vague in terms of, and this is just a silly little kind of suggestion here, that, you know, that the registrar may need to provide information to the registrar liaison team as they see fit, or something along those lines. Because if you make it too specific, you're going to end up excluding something that might be needed, you know, a year after a new version of a contract comes into being. And, you know, if David and his team have tools at their disposal, and there's nothing, you know, it's in some cases they probably can use what they have more effectively rather than actually adding more text into a document, which won't affect a lot of people unless they opt into it.
Steve, this is Dave Giza. I'll confirm with the registrar liaison team the data elements that are considered voluntary, you know, versus mandatory, so that we have clarity on that, you know, going forward.
Okay.
Here in the working group.
That'd be great. Okay, I see Cheryl and Holly. Are you still seeking recognition, or did I just fail to?
No, my hand's down.
Okay.
Yeah, it's actually showing a still hand up on my screen too, Holly, so there's some sort of lag.
Yeah.
But I, however, did want recognition. Thank you, Steve.
Go ahead.
Thanks, Cheryl here. And I must stop disagreeing with things Michele says. It'll ruin my reputation. But I think that what he posed, a silly example, wasn't silly at all. I think proper wording to establish a mandatory element of the provision of identified pieces of information is a useful thing as an amendment, but that it should refer to in language, and I'm sure the wordsmiths can do this, perhaps be general enough to refer to insert tool or list or appendix that the compliance team has control of and that is more easily updated, so you're not going back and changing RIAs with future amendments so often as you are with community and consensus built agreement changing a subset document that it refers to.
Okay.
That's all.
Thank you. Anybody else want to comment on this 9.1? And I think 9.2 really overlaps with this in terms of multiple accreditations. Any further comments on this? It strikes me that from what I heard here, there's no disagreement with the staff indication that this is a high priority. There are some very good suggestions about the need for definitions, the need to not to consider the reseller issue separately, the need to build in some flexibility here, such as through use of an appendix or something, as Cheryl just suggested. And these are all very good suggestions, but and we could include those. But basically, I think there's agreement about the high priority status of these issues. Is there objection to that? Okay, we're almost at the end of our time here. On 9.3, there are two different formulations of requiring the registrars to provide their operational and physical office locations and other contact information. I guess do people have comments on either of those? Does that fall in the same category as what we've just talked about? Or is there are there other points to raise about 9.3? Michaela, did you have your hand up for this?
Yeah, I did. It's just, it kind of amuses me in some respects, because the registry operators collect a lot of this information, and actually VeriSign goes through an entire validation process for each registrar who wants to get accredited with VeriSign after they've signed the REA. I mean, they do all these kind of crazy extra validation and asking for extra documents and what have you. I mean, the registry operators do collect a lot of this information already, as do ICANN staff.
But that this is for ICANN to collect it and in some cases to publicly disclose it, such as the you see in the law. Post that information on their website. So, but I think your point is well taken. Any other comments on this? Okay, well, we are at the end of our hour here. I think we've gotten through 9.3, and I hope people will continue to will respond to 5 through 8 that were have been circulated. A proposed priority ranking was on the list since December 30th. So I would encourage people to respond to those. We will plan to pick up at 9.4 when we convene again, and I will circulate a proposed timetable. I may wait until we actually have the date of that meeting, the council meeting that's now scheduled for April 22nd, so that when we have that precise date, we can, which we will in a few days, I think Glenn said, then we will. We'll circulate a proposed timetable for how to get from this point to the point 2 weeks prior to that meeting. I would like to suggest that we try to meet early in the week of the 25th. The staff has a retreat next week, so it's not very practical to meet next week, and this is we're on a biweekly schedule anyway, but let's we'll have a doodle poll circulated for early in the week of January 25th for our next meeting. Are there any further comments or points that people wish to raise? If not, thanks everyone, and we'll be talking week after next.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.